When it comes to education, who is responsible, the parents or the state? Traditionally, it was understood that the teachers and the schools were acting in loco parentis, that is, in the place of the parents. But lately, it seems that many involved in the education establishment see themselves as the arbiters of what should be taught to our children, not the parents per se. Emily Gao is the senior counsel for the Alliance Defending Freedom, and this is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. Several months ago, Emily posted an op-ed in Newsweek magazine in which she defended parental rights in education. In fact, we'll post to that article here. We'll have a link on this. Emily, it's great to have you on the program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Jerry.
So go ahead and explain to us this conflict that's been going on. And I think in some ways the COVID-19 crisis has caused some of this to come to light, because parents were beginning to see some of what was taught to their children, and they're thinking, wait a minute, you're not teaching math, you're not teaching writing, you're teaching, you know, things I don't even agree with, and I don't want my children exposed to this. So what are your thoughts?
Well, that's right. I think that COVID-19 did have a silver lining, which is that many parents started to see that their children's education is being infected with some dangerous ideologies based on critical theory, both with regard to race and to gender. And parents are, you know, not accepting that because they recognize the dangers to their children. And so they've been trying to stand up at school boards and in elections, but they've received a fair amount of opposition from lawmakers, from politicians, and from educators themselves. So there's a major battle going on between parents and schools and lawmakers.
And it even got to the point where the Attorney General under President Biden was essentially labeling some of these parents that were speaking out at school board meetings as quote-unquote domestic terrorists. That is way over the top, it would seem to me.
It is quite outrageous. It actually was an accusation made by the National School Board Association against parents, comparing them to domestic terrorists. And they apparently had meetings with the education secretary in the White House. And after these meetings, Attorney General Merrick Garland then issued that letter telling all the branches of the FBI, you know, to be on alert for parents just exercising, you know, their First Amendment rights at school board meetings to protest against these very dangerous ideologies in their children's education.
How do we kind of get control of this? I mean, first of all, let's lay the groundwork. Why is it that parents should, number one, be the most important control keepers of education for their children? First, let's lay that and explain that legally, too, because you're with the Alliance Defending Freedom, which is a legal group helping to defend our liberties.
Yes, well, children belong to their parents. They belong to their families that are headed by parents. The natural relationship between a parent and a child creates duties and rights for the parents to direct the upbringing, the education, and the care of their children. Of course, you know, the state does have an interest in providing civic education for students, but it's really parents who mediate the relationship between a child and the larger political community. And this has been recognized by the Supreme Court multiple times throughout the history of the Supreme Court's jurisprudence on parental rights. They have recognized that parental rights are a fundamental right rooted in the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. The Supreme Court said in 1925, in a case called Pierce versus Society of Sisters, that the child is not the mere creature of the state. It's those who nurture him and direct his destiny who have the right, coupled with the high duty, to recognize and prepare him for additional obligations. End of quote. So parents, under the law, and, you know, according to what most people understand about parental rights, are the ones who have the primary responsibility for their children's education and upbringing.
Would you mind contrasting the, let's say, the communist or the complete socialist view in reference to the very same question, who has the control, the parents or the state?
So the opposing view of children and parents is what I would call the communitarian view. That's actually found in a variety of societies. It was found in ancient Sparta, and it was something that Plato advocated for, separating children from their parents at age 7 to be sent away for military training. It is also, of course, found in communist and socialist societies. You know, Marx famously said that, you know, parents were really not to be trusted because the family was the root of a lot of the evils. Not just taking control of the education of students, but really indoctrinating them into ideologies of communism that are very anti-family, that teach children to distrust parental authority and to, you know, form their identity on their membership in the political community.
And in great contrast, that is, let's say, the view of the founding fathers of America when it comes to the education of children.
So the founders of America believed in natural rights. They believed in the natural right, the natural and pre-political right of parents to raise their own children. And, you know, this is rooted in the ideas of John Locke. And, you know, the founders believed in a very minimal role for the state to minimize the interference of the state in the life of the family. Unfortunately, there are a lot of cultural forces and political forces in our society now that really undermine the role of parents in their children's lives, that really take a very low view of parental knowledge and parental rights.
Okay, and as far as the Alliance Defending Freedom, what is your stance on this? I mean, obviously you're helping the parents, you know, even in some of these legal battles involved in this.
So the Alliance Defending Freedom has multiple lawsuits on behalf of parents. The first one is the Albemarle, Virginia litigation on behalf of 5 families who are challenging a policy that indoctrinates children of different races with the tenets of critical race theory. The school district has implemented what they call an anti-racist policy, but their anti-racist policy actually divides students by race and assigns them, you know, into an oppressor or an oppressed category. It tells white students that they have to fight against white culture. It tells minority students that their, you know, ambitions in life are going to be limited by their race. So one student who's from a multiracial background, Black and white and Native American, he began to question, you know, his Black identity after this instruction. He began to see himself as a disadvantage simply because of his race, and started to attribute negative associations to his ethnic heritage. So it's very damaging to students' self-perception as well as their perceptions of others. And frankly, it's just unconstitutional to indoctrinate students into a belief that, you know, all of their lives are going to be determined by their race. It treats students differently based on their race, and it violates the rights of these parents who teach their children that, you know, all people are created in the image of God. The second type of lawsuit, and ADF has filed multiple lawsuits for parents who are challenging what are called gender support plans. These are parents who oppose policies in Wisconsin and in Virginia that would seek to socially transition a child to a different gender identity, sometimes without informing the parents and sometimes in spite of the parents' explicit wishes. So these policies tell teachers to treat a student according to a transgender name or a transgender pronoun. And in one of the cases in Madison, Wisconsin, the parents were totally kept in the dark. The school was keeping separate files, separate identity for the child in school versus what they would tell the parents. And in another case in Wisconsin, in Kettle Moraine, there was a 12-year-old girl who was confused about her gender identity. The parents told the school, "We only want her to be treated as a girl." And the school said, we are going to treat, you know, your daughter however she identifies. Your wishes basically are not important. And so the school was defiant of the parents' wishes. So obviously these kinds of cases are egregious violations of parental rights. And that's why ADF is standing alongside these parents.
Wow, that's interesting. And how have you done in the courts with some of these cases? You mentioned earlier that whenever the Supreme Court in previous times has looked at the issue of parental rights, they've said, yes, the parents have the rights. But tell us about your experience at the court so far with all these different lawsuits.
Well, the lawsuits have been filed fairly recently. The case in Madison, Wisconsin has reached the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and so we are awaiting the outcome of that case. The other cases in Kettle Moraine and Albemarle, they're still in the earlier stages, so we don't know the outcomes, but I can say that the damage to children is already occurring. For instance, we know that in the case of gender dysphoria in children, 80 to 95% of children actually become comfortable with their biological sex if there's no interference before puberty. So when these schools start to treat children according to, you know, a different gender identity, when they treat a boy as a girl or a girl as a boy, this is actually a form of a psychosocial treatment that can increase the odds of long-term persistence of gender dysphoria, according to Dr. Kenneth Zucker, who's an expert in our cases. So the damage is already being done to the children who are, you know, confused about their gender, who are being told by their schools that, you know, you're born in the wrong body and the solution is, you know, just transition to another gender. That's offering a false hope, because sex change is not really possible. And the outcomes from the cases that we know of show that, you know, having some cosmetic changes made to your physical appearance doesn't actually resolve the emotional and mental distress that people with gender dysphoria feel.
All right, we have about 1 minute left. It's so interesting when you were mentioning that comment about the, you know, the critical race theory, and especially the idea that young black kids would be taught, hey, you're inferior because in America, because of the systemic racism that we're trying to uproot. It seems to me like they're going backwards on all of Martin Luther King's progress on the idea of, hey, let's be colorblind as a society and not judge people according to their skin color. So we have about 1 minute to wrap up on this overall principle, parental rights versus the rights of the educrats, if you will.
So parental rights do not end at the schoolhouse gate. Parents have the right to direct the upbringing, the education, and the care of their children. And this has become particularly important in light of these toxic ideologies like critical race theory and transgender ideology. As I mentioned in the Albemarle case, we have stories from both the students and their parents of how the students are actually experiencing critical race theory in the classroom. There's another example from a student who was Latina in that school district. She was shown a video comparing a hypothetical white student and a minority student, which showed that, you know, the white student could live in a big house, but the minority student could not live in a big house, again, simply because of the minority student's race. So instead of telling students that they can achieve the American dream regardless of their race, this kind of indoctrination into critical race theory is actually setting a ceiling on students' ambitions, telling them that they can only go so far in this country because they are limited by race. And that's not a message that we should be sending to any child.
Amen. Emily Gao, adflegal.org for more information. Thank you so much, Emily. All the best.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.